Your special is so good. Some of the specials should not be specials out there.
No, man. It should just be, you know what? They should have a category called, I'm just dropping some shit off. It's not a special. It's just like, we just dropping some shit off real quick. These are some thoughts I had.
Yeah.
They're not fully fleshed.
Let's come up with a name for that.
Yeah, it's mid. It's called mid.
Mid. Yep.
It's called.
You heard it here. I'm working it out. It's mid.
Hell, drop the mid specials.
Mid specials. Oh, that's a mid special.
Yeah.
It was a mid special. It was pretty good for a mid special.
Yeah, and then if it's great, it's like, damn, they should have done a real special.
Yeah, that was like a real special.
Damn.
Yeah.
That mid special should have been a real special.
That is the voice of Chris Redd. Chris is a phenomenally funny comedian. You might know him from Saturday Night Live as a cast member for many years, which he won an Emmy for. He was in Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping, a movie that I did a cameo in. That's where he and I met originally. We had a great conversation today. By the way, it is week 11 of my Broadway show, The Old Man and the Pool. I've had such a blast doing it. There are two more weeks. There's very few tickets left. You can get them on mikeonbroadway.com or on TodayTix, which is probably the least expensive way to get tickets. So there's great deals over there. I think you're going to love this episode with Chris Redd. He's an interesting guy. He has this new special on HBO Max called Why Am I Like This? I love the special. I mean, we talk about the special a lot, but I have to say, like, it made me laugh out loud alone, like, countless times. He blends improv and, you know, characters and stand-up in a way that I think is completely unique and original. We have a great chat today. I think you're going to love this one. Enjoy my conversation with the great Chris Redd. In your special, you make a reference to when you're broke and you're looking at like how much money rappers have and like spend, and you reference Jay-Z.
I
thought of myself because I used to sleep on my friends' couches when I would tour.
Couch surf too, yeah.
Yeah. And so like I remember staying with my friends Ryan and Mary when I would play DC, like all the time.
Yeah.
And I said, when I would always go, when my ship comes in, I'm going to get you guys a Jay-Z fridge. I meant by Jay-Z fridge.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, what's the Jay-Z fridge?
What I meant by Jay-Z fridge is that, like, one time I saw, like, documentary or Cribs or something on Jay-Z, and his house just, like, had, like, a full fridge. And I was like, that's the Jay-Z fridge. Like, whose fridge is full with, like, fresh things?
Jay-Z's.
You know what I mean? Jay-Z's.
Jay-Z's fridge. And every Southern house I've ever been to.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, mad leftovers.
That's all interesting.
Yeah.
I always have a dream of, like, rich people have the Jay-Z fridge. They just have the full-ass fridge.
Just full, unopened things.
And fresh.
And everything's fresh. Now, that's a Jay-Z fridge.
That's the Jay-Z fridge. You have a person doing that.
Yeah, man. See, my shit is, my shit is hide and seek with something that got old. You know what I'm saying? So, like, every time I open up, I'm like, all right, what shouldn't be here?
That's what mine is.
Yeah, I'm just the looking same. Around like, all right.
I was rushing here because I had, this is a bizarre thing. I had HR, the harassment speech meeting thing.
They're
and
so
it was
annoying.
On Zoom, and it was like, it's weird. It's probably hard, I think, for people like you and me where our coping mechanism is humor.
Right.
And so they're saying serious shit to us. And then all you're thinking, as a comedian, I think we train our brains to always think of the joke.
Always. Yeah.
So everything they say, I'm thinking of as a setup. And my brain just goes to punchline, but I can't say it.
Right.
Because it's obviously inappropriate. And so I was just silent the whole time, just going, yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I've learned a lot. I'm just waiting for somebody to be in those harassment trainings, and they set up a scenario, they give an answer, and then somebody's like, oh.
Yes.
Although, like,
I think every now and then, when in this one, I go, yeah, George isn't so good at that. You know what I mean? Like, I did have a couple of those where I was like, because part of it's old school. Like, part of it is, like, you have some coworkers who get up there in age, and like some of the stuff they say in the harassment training, you're like, all right, well, we'll see. We'll see if that ever gets called.
My God. Yeah. Oh,
That's out there.
That's honestly is my guilty pleasure. I like seeing the older folks get really like, just really up in arms when they can't hug no more. Like,
I know.
Like this dude, I'm not going to put you out there like that. Yeah. But we were in this harassment training with somebody I work with, and he's like, let me ask a question. If I hug someone, and we've hugged before,
right.
That's wrong.
Right.
Like, well, you know, it depends on the relationship. But I'm saying, so I can't hug anymore? And we're
right.
Like, hey, man.
Well, there's some anger.
Why are you so mad about this hug?
There's some anger. There's some anger at the HR institution for sure. And I would say generally, and again, I want to be careful. I don't want to use ageism.
No.
Because ageism is in the HR handbook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can't use ageism. People can be any age they want to be until they die.
I don't want to be ageist when I say this, but one of the trends I've noticed is that in the HR situations, the older folks generally don't do as well and are more angry.
They're just mad the world's changing. You know what? I get it. I understand. Like, I remember when I started therapy, I went and I told my folks about it. And I have a little bit in the special, but
I love that stuff about therapy in your special.
And I talked to my folks, and they were really, you know, really open, surprisingly. And then we got mad close off of that. And I was talking to me and my dad talked more than we ever talked growing up. And I noticed he had social anxiety. And I'm like, Dad, you got social anxiety, bro. Like, you should go get that treated. And he's like, boy, I'm 70. It's over.
Oh,
it's,
shit.
Not life. Life ain't over. Just like growth.
Right. Growth.
Like, personal growth. I'm done, boy. I am who I am. But hey, that's cool for you.
That's tricky. My parents are 82, and I have to sometimes come to grips with the fact that my dad and I disagree about certain political things, but I'm not going to change him.
Yeah.
All I can do is express love in a way that supports that who he is and that I love him.
And I think if we had a little bit more of that in the world, we'd be all right. Huh? We have a little bit more love like we love our parents. We have a little bit more mid-specials.
A little bit more mid-specials. Men's specials are wild. So when you were talking about open micers.
Yeah.
Because, sometimes you see the open micers and they try to put out the mid specials on YouTube and stuff. And you're like, no, hold on to that mid special.
Yeah, hold on to that. Or the crowd work stuff, which there's some great crowd work stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of crowd work stuff that's not really crowd work. It's just question and answer.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, maybe write a joke or...
Well, you bob and weave in your special into crowd work in a way that's completely seamless. I was wondering whether it's a function of, like, your personality. Because I feel like you go, this topic, crowd work, you're back into
a
thing.
I came out and said for the first time ever to a crowd of people that I have ADHD, depression, and anxiety. And this particular body of work is supposed to be in the style of my brain.
Yeah.
Because I'm you know, the whole thing is very selfish and narcissistic kind of, because I'm just talking about my inner shit.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to feel like how I think.
Yeah.
And when I was doing the tour, I love improv. Not enough to just be an improv troupe forever.
And be broke forever and have no job forever.
And wear nothing but hoodies, even though I love hoodies. Oh, wait, I don't have a hoodie today. No.
Where's your Second City hoodie?
Oh, it's at the crib. They're real soft. but I wanted to keep the improv alive because I love like real crowd, real off the cuff joke writing. It's really dope to me, and I feel like crowd work got a lot of like flack. I mean, there's a lot of guys doing it now, like Schultz, and like there's a couple folks that are doing it off the cuff that are writing real jokes. Like, but then there's like I just hated seeing like the really set up. Like, clearly you set this person up to, like, say a certain thing so you can get to a certain thing.
Yeah.
Or it's just, like, plants or just weird shit. I just wanted to – I hope it came off elevated. That's what I was trying to
do. Oh, it does.
You know.
And also you do the cool split screen.
Yo.
Which I like. I don't think I've seen that.
I was looking at 1,000 specials, you know. Again, I guess, because I had to watch most of them. But, like, I was trying to look and see if anybody had done it. But I was like, man, it felt – I just wanted the feeling to – I wanted the feeling of, like, you being there.
Yeah.
And even when I'm roasting on the road and, like people laugh and they don't see this person. Most people don't see the person I'm talking about. I'm like, but if I feel like it just adds a little piece if you can actually see who I'm talking about, so you know I'm being so I'm not being accurate about the things I'm saying about them and not just like.
I like that you repeat what they say too, because sometimes comedians forget to be like, just so you know, this person said this. They're not mic'd.
Right. Yeah. They're not mic'd, and it's not set up in a way where like, can you say that again, sir? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Can you say that again, sir? It's really funny.
All right. But it also gives me a little second to think, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes it's like right away, and sometimes, you know what I'm saying, I repeat it real quick to just be like, okay, all right, I'm going. Just figure out the angle and then just dive in.
So you and I met, I want to say, like, at the premiere of Popstar. We're both in Popstar. You're, like, a major part. I'm, like, a cameo. I'm in
you
the,
killed that shit,
I'm, thanks, man. I'm in the TMZ, like,
that TMZ
parody.
Shit was so funny, though, man.
But I got introduced to you. I think in the best way to be introduced to somebody is when somebody else says, that guy's hilarious.
Yeah,
right?
100%.
That's way better than being like, hi, I'm Mike. I'm a comedian.
Yeah,
that's
he does
the worst.
Comedy.
Yeah, exactly. But Yorma Taccone, who's part of The Lonely Island, who made the movie Popstar, said, because I had read the script for Popstar and I thought it was a riot, and he goes, the guy that we have playing the like featured rapper comes on the road. He's like, it's Chris Redd. He's like one of the funniest dudes I've ever seen.
Oh man, that's
and he's amazing,
Norma, man.
Isn't he great?
Yeah, he's the best dude.
So your character in Popstar is Hunter, the Hunter,
Hunter the Hungry,
Hunter the Hungry. Yeah, and is he loosely based on Tyler the Creator?
Yeah, I love Tyler, man. He's one of the funniest, one of the most creative rappers. Just ever, bro. And I heard he was a fan of Bust Down, which was like,
oh wow,
a real like,
oh, that's cool,
pleasure. Yeah, man, because I wanted to do him justice, you know what I mean, in that way, because I feel like making fun of motherfuckers is like showing love, man, like most of the time, you know what I'm saying. You could tell when it's not.
Oh, but, I agree,
you know, but I think that, like,
well, you just want to be mentioned. That's the other thing,
you know what I'm saying,
whenever they roast people and they go like, It's like the most insulting is not being mentioned at the roast.
100%.
Yeah.
Like even one step above not being mentioned is like, I don't know why you here in the roast.
So when you did that movie, I mean, did you go from like not being in anything to being like this big part in a movie? Like, was that a huge thing?
It was like my first like huge big movie ever. You know what I mean? And I had got a couple like guest starring roles in Chicago, like Empire, and some other stuff. But that was like that was the first big thing. So I'm showing up the most unknown person in the cast.
Yeah,
every day the like super famous people just.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Sarah Silverman was in it.
Yeah, like, dog. Sarah.
Will Arnett was in my scenes.
Yeah, I didn't get to see
Chelsea
Will
Peretti.
You know, like, man, it was just like a slew of some of the best. I came to set on days I wasn't even shooting, bro.
Yeah,
and I was like, is this cool? Is this
good? That's cool.
And then Yorma was like, oh, I did the same thing. You know what I mean? I was like, and I had to check, make sure, but I wanted to jump in as many times as I could because I was like, I'm gonna learn everything I can about this whole business.
What would you give for advice for someone who's like nervous about being on the set for first time or doing a job that they think is like over their head or whatever?
I say you got the job for a reason, so bring your best, everything that you've ever done to prepare for that moment. Bring it every single day of your life. Work like you're trying to outwork all these motherfuckers you're intimidated by.
Yeah.
You'll be so focused on that you're not gonna like pay attention to the bullshit. And also just like be aware as hell. Just be very aware, like, you know, of people's energies, like, all of that shit.
You're saying you're special. You want to be a basketball player and a rapper when you're a kid. I had those two aspirations as well.
Yeah.
In my first special, I talked about it. I want to be a rapper and the basketball player and the owner of a pizza restaurant where third graders could hang out. That was my other goal. It's a very niche market. Very niche. Yeah. When I was in third grade, it made so much sense.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill it. Later, flash forward 20 years later, you're like the saddest man.
I know. Well, no, that's what I realized. I know. I was like, I became a grown up. I was like, that's a pretty creepy goal. hitting up the third grade market.
Yeah, on the third graders, baby.
Are you going to be like Hannibal, where you're going to become a hip hop star later in your career? Like, Hannibal Buress is legit. I mean, and of course, you know, Childish Gambino is the biggest example.
Yeah.
I mean, Donald had like a major comedy career.
Yeah.
And then became a major hip hop star.
Yo, this dude's doing it. There's a wide lane for my style of comedy music.
Yeah.
I am still doing it. You know, I left SNL and I honed it there. But there's a lot of shit you can't say on that show. A lot of shit you can't do.
Right.
And so now I get to do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm gonna be a big star or nothing like that, but I think I'm gonna put out some cool stuff, some interesting stuff. There's also dudes like Zach Fox, who's like very good at the shit too. So,
interesting.
Yeah, he's very funny and a very good rapper.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's shout out to Zach. Text me back, motherfucker. I'm playing. that's like a running joke. But yeah, there's like Matt. There's like a lot of like comedy guys and ladies who are like getting into the space of music and making some good, cool shit and different stuff. So it's nice.
What do you think is the similarity and difference between hip hop and stand up comedy?
Laughs. I think there's a lot of similarities though, man. Like a lot of rappers think they're comics, and some of them,
for sure.
A lot of them are very funny.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and the rhythm of how you tell jokes, your laugh rates versus your punchlines are pretty similar. Like, that was...
Yeah.
I feel like that's where I got my liking for my joke rate was from how I wrote punchlines. So, like, I would write punchlines, like, every bar. Or sometimes I would try to split and write two punchlines in one bar. So,
yeah.
So when I got over to joke writing, it was kind of like, oh, I just like to... You know what I mean? So when I was editing out a bunch of dumbass jokes that I like to say. I had Sam J look at the special before it came out, and I was like, any notes? And she was like, hey, you know the little dumbass jokes you like? Take them little dumbass jokes out.
I love Sam so much because she is the most honest person I've
That's my
ever,
sister, bro.
I think I've ever encountered.
Yeah, dog. It's beautiful. It's like no matter where I am in life, no matter what it is, she gonna be Sam J, and she gonna be the realest motherfucker on earth with me. And
but the thing that Sam is commenting on, like, take out these little jokes that you like.
It's the mid special jokes.
The mid special jokes.
I'm a road guy. I like the road a lot.
Yeah.
And I grew up on the road because I couldn't get booked and shit. So I just was like on the road a bunch. So I like.
Why couldn't you get booked?
It's just like coming up.
In Chicago?
Yeah, like, well, I couldn't get booked in, like, major clubs or on, like, certain shows or Netflix stuff because, like, I was improvising and doing written jokes, and they always thought I was just lacking material. They always saw the improv as, like, oh, he doesn't have an hour. When it's really just me mining jokes. I'm doing the same process as everybody else.
Wow.
It's just, like, sometimes, depending on the show that you saw, you know, there might be more X, Y, and Z, and it's not... And when it's not all together, you know, it's a rough work in progress, like everybody else's shit.
Yeah.
But even when it was tight, like I would have a tight 20, and I would just do a couple things in the crowd. They just thought I was filling time, and so that's really what made me be like, in my special, I'm gonna fucking show these people what they've been saying no to all these years. So it was. So all my drive comes from revenge.
Yeah, that's really funny. Which is why you wrote the joke. Your Jesus is from New Jersey.
Because I hate New York. No, I actually do not understand the beef with New York and New Jersey at all. Like, I don't get it. Y'all both knew, but I don't get it. It's all good.
Your Jesus is from New Jersey line from your special is one of my favorite comedy lines I've heard. Well, because you put it in the context of you go to Utah.
Yeah.
You're talking to Mormons.
Yep.
I think as comics, we've all gone to Utah and had these Mormon conversations.
Every single one of us.
I think all of us have. Because Utah's a great place for comedy.
100%.
They love comedy.
They love. That's what's beautiful. I remember when somebody got mad about the Mormon joke and they weren't Mormon. And I was like, bro, you don't know what the fuck you're getting mad at, bro. Because
in
every Mormon I've ever performed this joke for loves this joke because it's so close and so real to what they are.
And they like Book of Mormon.
They love Book of Mormon.
It's a musical
bro.
Of making fun of their religion for 2 hours.
Say what you want about Mormons. They could take a joke, bro.
They can take a joke.
They can take a joke. I don't know what else they do in there.
And also, I don't understand their religion, like, almost at all.
No, it's ridiculous. Listen, the premise is wild. It's like, Jesus was born in Colorado. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
But cool, man.
It's the only religion that you can, like, disprove with a paper trail. You're like, dude, I have emails that say this religion isn't true.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, dog. Oh man, there was speaking of mid jokes. Utah loves jokes so much, they love terrible jokes. I remember I came with like Church of Latter-day Saints. Where are the earlier day saints at? And they went crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew in my mind, this joke is fucking bad.
I'm cutting it.
I'm cutting it after. I can't believe I said the full thing. But they laughed so hard, I was like, if I wasn't self-aware, I would have been like, oh, well, this going right in my special.
Well, local, that's the thing about touring, is local jokes kill harder than anything you could pop. One time, Mulaney sent me an audio recording. He was just about to film a special, and he was like, hey, can you listen to this show I did in Florida? He opened with 20 minutes on Florida and crushed.
Yeah.
Did 20 minutes of improv Florida jokes. I've never heard people laugh this loud in my life. It was like breaking my phone. My phone was shaking.
Man, dog, that's crazy.
Isn't it crazy? And I called him. I go, you're going to use the Florida jokes? I have to say, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, that's some pretty good Florida material. But you know Cat Williams,
though. I was just about to mention that.
Yeah, so Cat Williams opens his special talking about Jacksonville. I want to say for at least 15.
Yeah.
And it works.
It works.
There's something about that. It's a classic example of like, in the specific is the universal. If you do the specific on Jacksonville well enough, like he does, we all kind of get it.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, yo, I haven't been to that part of Jacksonville, but sounds real.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Or like that reminds me of, you know, Worcester, Massachusetts, where I grew up, which is sort of the Jacksonville of Massachusetts.
Yeah, right. Because there's always a place that's very similar to any place that you shit on.
No, absolutely. Or make fun of,
you know?
But you had a joke where you're like, all right, that's going to go away because it's just doing well because it's local.
Yeah. I was like, no one's going to – I haven't – first of all, like, I always like to try things enough before I'm putting it in, like, a special. And if it hasn't, like it has to kill, like, at least – 5 or 6 times for me to like really consider moving it in something, then it has to be like,
yeah,
it makes sense against the rhythm and the theme of shit.
Well, it's interesting because like you were saying that Sam J was like, take out, you know, XYZ jokes because they're too light or whatever, they're too small. That's one of the things about your special I think is so good, is it's so dense. Like it's just laugh to laugh. And it's like, when you are, is that in the performance phase or is that in the editing room phase that you're cutting it back?
We cut an hour of jokes.
Did 2 hours and you cut it to an hour?
We cut it to an hour. It was very tough.
Wow.
I improvised for a long time. And then like I was stretching certain stuff. But you know, it was, I like to machine gun jokes. That's kind of like what I like to do. It's my favorite thing. So I'm like, if I can, make that feeling, you know what I mean, and get as many jokes in here as possible that are on theme. I think that was Sam's other point, was like, this joke isn't really like doing anything for the theme of this specific section X, Y, and Z. So like that's what you get. I overwrite jokes for the hour and then try to. And then I have to pick which ones.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, this is kind of weak or this. But like, that's what I wanted it to feel like. That it was just like, damn, machine gun of jokes. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that every special I do is like that.
So you're jotting down stuff, you're making notes, and then like, I'll see you at the Comedy Cellar sometimes. Like, when you're at the Comedy Cellar, what makes you want to put a joke on stage for the first time?
If I can't stop thinking about it.
That's funny.
Yeah. If it's just like, if I'm constantly thinking about it, I'm constantly going back to it. If sometimes now it's changing now because I feel like I'm in a place where comedy's like, I'm becoming more comfortable in comedy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a way that like, I don't worry about being funny. It's just kind of like, what am I going to do with the funny?
Yeah.
So it's like sometimes we'll just be having a good conversation at the cellar, and then I'm like, oh, I want to talk about this, and then, you know, randomly, or I'll have a challenge for myself, and I'll just be like, go say the realest thing you can think of in the moment, for you at that second, and then go from there. You know,
that's interesting. Yeah, I think like people ask me a lot, like after Old Man in the Pool, what are you gonna do? And I'm like, whatever I'm obsessed with.
Yeah,
but I don't know what that is until I'm there.
Exactly. You know, there is, like, the new set. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to – you know, after you drop one, you're like, okay, what the fuck am I gonna talk about?
Yeah.
And I took the month, the doctor recommended month off, stand up after you drop a special.
Yeah.
And then I snuck back on stage just to kind of see like where my head is at.
Yeah.
And I just started talking about running away, and like I had like a whole chunks of like stories about shit. I'm like, oh, okay. And it was like the whole five shows I did that night were just my temperature check to see where my head was going to be at. And I was like, oh, I like where this is going.
There's a lot of stories about running away.
It's just about like one, like, the premise is just, you know, getting back to a place of happiness that we had as kids.
And
how you can't run away anymore. Like, as an adult, you can't run away. Like, running away is like with like I'm gonna go start a new life. You know what I mean? Like you're a kid, you're an idiot. So you're just like I'm gonna run away from the people that take care of me.
Like I'm gonna run away from home.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I'm gonna go start a new life with my friends somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you don't have this even thought out completely.
Right.
And everybody who runs away always comes back. There's kids at school like I'm running away tonight.
Right.
And they're like
I'm sick of my parents.
Yeah.
And I hate the teachers.
And those people grow up to be people who tell you they're gonna leave Facebook. You know what I mean? Because you're like, I'm running away, nigga. I'm going to see you in math class tomorrow, you little bitch.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
You know?
Because I feel like that builds out to a much larger concept.
Right.
Right? Yeah. There's a big thematic globe there.
Yeah, because I wanted to do something more observational of, like, what's going on.
Yeah.
For the second special. Like, I knew I wanted to do that, but I didn't know how I wanted to get in there. And then I started talking about that, and I was like, oh. I'll find it. I still, there's still a whole lot to figure out. But
yeah.
Then I got hit in the face, so I'm going to incorporate that somehow.
Oh, of course.
Well, I am going to.
Of course.
Just how much of it, you know. And then just a lot of shit. I just kind of like.
I felt terrible when I saw that. I mean, what a weird thing to see something about your friend in the news.
Yeah,
my friend got hit.
It's crazy.
It's in the news.
I've done all this charity, and nothing got me more headlines than getting fucking knocked in the face, Mike.
My God.
Like, goddamn, it was crazy. I was still going to go perform. That's the fucking bullshit about it. I got hit in the face, and I got hit so fast that I hit the ground and jumped up and didn't even know I hit the ground. And I was about to go right back in and do a set. I was like, this is going to be a weird beginning. You know what I mean? That's all I thought of. And then I just kept leaving. And I was like, all right, maybe I should not do a set.
I jumped through the second story window in Walla Walla, Washington. It's 2005. Next night I had a gig at University of Portland. I drove there. University of Oregon in Eugene. I drove there.
Crazy.
I did it. I had glass. I had glass shards that were they had taken out of my out of my legs. I had stitches, all this stuff.
Holy shit!
And I did the gig because I feel like that's the thing you were describing of like you were gonna get on stage.
Yeah.
That's where our heads are at as comics all
sickness.
The time.
Yeah, sickness. That's a sickness.
Yeah, yeah.
I got stitches, bro, and I was about to go on stage right after that. Sam J, again, coming. Sam J is my voice of reason for most things.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to get off stage like a warrior. I got stitches in my face.
Oh, my
it's
gosh.
Still puffy a little bit. I'm going to be a warrior.
Wait, did you have stitches?
I had stitches.
Right away?
And I had black
the medic,
eyes.
A medic came in and.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They tied my shit like a shoelace. In Bellevue Hospital, the worst hospital in New York City. I was sitting in that hospital, man, and at one point, at several points throughout the night, a man was like, I'm going to kill everybody in here. Like, he just yelled that a lot. And I was like, hey, man, you know we all in here, don't you?
Wow.
He was mad. I think something was going on with his foot, gangrene or something. I don't know.
Was someone with you as your friend there?
Yeah, my girl was there and then my cousin was there.
Wow.
Yeah, so I just sat there bleeding, and then they tied my face up, and I went home like I'm gonna get back on stage. So I went to the gym that day, and that was bad decision because there's no way to work out with a black eye and a broken nose and not look like J-Lo and enough. You know what I mean? Like this ain't never gonna happen again. Like there's no way to not look like that. At me like I hope he overcomes what he went through. Oh, and I'm just like, I'm just out here working out. I work out every day, y'all. Y'all see me every day. So I'm just like, that anger, I can't take that on stage. I realized I couldn't do it.
And I
did, you know.
I feel like a lot of us comics have been punched in our lives.
That's the thing too. That's the most irritating part of it. Well, there's a lot of irritating parts of it.
Yeah.
But the main one was like people, oh my God. so much trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, no, racism is trauma, nigga. That was just a bad surprise, nigga. Like, God damn it.
You allude to things in your first special that are tip of the iceberg of what you could talk about, selling crack
for a
week in your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like how many comedians have sold crack? Like, not that many. Like, you're
not,
like,
well, there's not that many. Let's say not that many.
Variety's top 10 crack dealers turned comedians. Oh my God, you got number one.
Oh man. I got a number one for something. I wasn't good at it. I shouldn't be number one.
Well, it's like you're one of these people who, between that and being on SNL, being a road comic, and you know, living in Chicago, Naperville, and all these places, like, you've lived a lot of life for someone who's young.
I've had so many jobs. I've lived a lot of life. Been chasing different dreams all my life.
Yeah.
I just knew I wanted to do something outside of the norm of what society set up. I just didn't know what it was. And so I searched a lot. And when you don't know yourself when you're young, but you're ambitious and you work hard, you end up just trying a bunch of different shit. And that's what I did. I just dived in a bunch of things. And if people told me I couldn't do it, I did it 50 times harder.
Yeah.
Even if it was a bad idea. That's why I did all the running the street shit. I was trying to fit in, and then, like, you know, eventually did for a while, and it still wasn't great. Never was great at the street shit, but, you know, I held my own.
You know? I think, like, you gotta dig into that in the second special, because it's like, it's such a universe that when we see it depicted in film or novels, it's super dramatic, but it's never funny.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm balancing, like, how much I want to put in a special, and I will, versus like what I'm writing. So I'm working on some shows,
and some
different projects that I'm like, what's the best format and way to tell these stories? And so, I think I'll tell some of them in like a music form, some of them in a show.
Yeah.
I have a show I'm working on right now that's gonna. I used to con with a couple people. We used to, like, this is way before comedy. This is back in when I was doing bullshit. We used to just, like, be little con artists.
Yeah.
So I'm making a show about that and shit, and
like three card Monty and shit like that.
Like just hitting stores, just hitting licks. I don't want to incriminate myself.
I think you already did.
But, you know, we used to be badasses running around stealing shit, reselling it, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like, it's really about, like, I was concerned for a long time about, like, if I retell these stories, am I going to implicate myself or some shit? But I don't worry about that too much anymore. I change a lot of stuff up. And honestly, it's been so long, I don't think.
I think there's plausible deniability with comedy.
100%.
Like, I think that, like comedy, if someone said, like, hey, you stole blah, blah, blah 10 years ago, you'd just be like, no, I didn't. That's just a funny story I tell, and it's embellished. And
also, people don't really believe me, and that's hilarious. No, a dude was so fucking mad on Twitter, bro, and that's new. People mad on Twitter? New as fuck. And this dude hit me up like, yo, this man's assault is almost more cap than him selling drugs. And I'm like, I sold drugs terribly, and I was honest about it. You say I'm lying about selling drugs bad? That doesn't even make any sense. That's like me coming up and lying about having bad sex. My nigga, like, oh, my dick game is terrible. Oh, it cap. Like, what are you talking about?
Wait,
bro?
What is cap? I don't understand what
cap
the criticism
is. It's a lie.
Oh. Yeah.
See, putting you on something.
I'm trying to get hip to this stuff.
Yeah, man. All right. You know, take that back to your HR meeting, man.
When I moved to New York, I got trashed at the Comedy Cellar so hard, like, by, like, you know, Patrice. And I mean, Patrice was, like, the greatest of all time at, like, just trashing young comics.
100%. I heard stories forever.
Did you have that when you came into comedy?
What? Came up in Chicago, boy. Ballhead Phillips, Marlon Mitchell. What's up, niggas? Lil Rel. These motherfuckers, D-Ray, Davis, these motherfuckers can roast your ass to death. Damon Williams, I'm not naming all you motherfuckers. I love y'all, but like, man, coming up under these motherfuckers, man, you get roasted all the time. You get roasted in the lobby.
Yeah.
You'll go catch the bomb. Chicago's mean, bro. Like, I remember like going up at Jokes and No, shout out to Mary Lindsay. I do a lot of shout outs, apparently. And dog, that was a club that would fucking, they would do bomb sounds. Like, they couldn't wait for your joke not to work. As soon as you said a joke and it didn't work, somebody's like, ee! And like, the whole crowd is doing a, ee! Like Hiroshima bomb noise, dog.
Devastating.
And then you go outside and like, yo, let's go to White Palace. It was this restaurant that was like 10 minutes up the road. And so you could sit down, have breakfast at 11:30 and get roasted all night.
Wow.
And if you could hang, you know what I'm saying? You could just come back tomorrow and everybody, you know, and eventually you get in good. But man, that pissed me off at first.
Yeah.
I ain't like it. Because I was like, man, all these motherfuckers roasted me. I ain't never coming back.
Yeah.
But then I just, you know, I was back that next week.
Same.
You know, doing the same shit.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, man, I think that's what you need. You need that shit, bro. You need that. They're just introducing you to how tough the game is in general. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also letting you know about your flaws in case you didn't know.
This is called the slow round. This is just sort of like thoughts and memories and random things. Like, do you have a nickname growing up that was either particularly bad or particularly good?
I'll give you two because I feel like it's unfair to give the cool one without giving the one that pissed me off a lot. Chief was my last rap name that I had. And that's because I was smoking and I was the leader. But the bad one that my best friend's cousin gave me is Bobblehead. And it was before the rap song Bobblehead came out, which is about like a person who sucks dick. That's not what the joke was for me, though. My head, when I was growing up, was way bigger than my body
because
I was really skinny.
This is the cruelest. This is now the cruelest, cruelest nickname.
So I'm sitting, when I sit in cars and shit, and I didn't really realize this, I would be like, my head. I would be sitting in cars riding and smoking and my head just doing this. And I'm listening to the music, you know, I look like a fucking pop bobblehead, bro. And they were like, hey, I remember just being in the car and I'm smoking. And then he was like, hey, Chris, your bobblehead ass. And everybody in the car went crazy. I'm like, I'm not no bobblehead. Well, my head bobbled. It was fucking awful. And then the song came out and that just reignited the joke.
Wow.
Yeah, it was terrible. I hung out with some funny.
That's the worst is when someone nails something about you.
Yo.
Patrice O'Neill used to call me Big Head Leah. My head was too big. I was like, Patrice, you have the biggest head I've ever seen.
That don't matter.
By the way, it doesn't matter.
It never matters.
Also, no one heard that because his voice was so much louder than everybody else's.
Yep, that's
it. They would hear him make fun of me, and then he would win.
Oh, man. I love being loud because when you're on a roll and a motherfucker's not as loud as you and you're taking a good joke. There's been roasts where I've been in going back to back and someone had got me good.
Yeah.
No one heard it. And I buried it. I was like, ha, yeah, you know, that's my favorite thing.
That being louder in roast is a very effective tool.
Yeah, because no one's gonna be like, wait, what'd you say? Shh. You know what I mean? No one's gonna clear space for you in a roast. That's insane.
What's the best advice anyone's ever given you that you used?
There's been a lot, but one of the best pieces of advice I got from a dude outside of a 7-Eleven, he had pulled up in his dope-ass car. I didn't have a car. I was like maybe 14 or 15 at the time. I was hanging out with my friends. We were going to get like, I don't know, a Swisher or some shit. And this kid pulls up. Dude's like maybe a year older than me. Fresh-ass car. I'm like, what the fuck did you do? He had like maybe a couple years, like maybe 17 or something like that. But he was like, man, I just, like, he had his own business already. You know what I mean? Now, I'm sure there's probably more to it because 17-year-old have his own business. You know, but he was like, I just, you know, put my head down and I worked for 3 years. I didn't party. I didn't do nothing. I just went and I worked for what I wanted. And that shit stuck with me so hard.
Oh, my gosh,
Because when when it came time to like doing comedy, there was like a lot of people going out and like drinking every night. And you know, like a lot of, I was doing improv and stand up. So I had a lot of like circles that were out partying a lot. And I didn't do that. So it took me a longer time to get to know people on like a personal level because I was always working because I was on this schedule. Like I got to put these years in. I always use 3 years as a test to see if I'm really into what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
And so when I got into comedy, I was like, 3 years, I need to see some kind of, well, I was ignorant. So I was like, 3 years, if I ain't make it, I'm done.
Yeah.
And obviously, I didn't make it, but there was like enough there for me to know that this is a trajectory I wanted to invest my time into.
It's funny, I was reading this book that Scott Galloway wrote called The Algebra of Happiness that I read recently. And he says this thing, it's not dissimilar to what your advice was, is he goes, your 20s, if you want to be successful in your 30s, you're going to have to work so hard in your 20s that you have no free time to do anything, basically.
No free time. I spent my 20s watching people get married, families.
Yeah. Go to weddings.
Yeah. I didn't go to weddings. I just went to my first wedding. It was my little brother.
My friends are so annoyed at me. I don't make anybody's wedding.
Oh, man.
I've only been to like 3 weddings.
Bro, I swear to God, I miss everybody's wedding. I was just like known for this. I'm known for missing weddings.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I was broke until 31. So like all my 20s, I was flat.
Yeah.
I didn't have a dollar to my name that I could keep for too long. You know what I mean? That's just what it was.
And when you talk about in your special, when you got money, when you made money for the first time, you were like, I'm going to take my friends out.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
man.
And like party or like go on a trip.
Bro, I swear to God. Yeah. I go on a trip and we went to Miami. That was the first big like party. Like what I said, the special was very real. I flew out 6 of my friends and me to Miami, got a yacht, jet skis. I was, every day was like an event. We did 3, 4, 5 clubs every night. You know, Jay-Z Fridge.
Yeah.
4 days is just like the craziest shit you could ever imagine, right? I spent easily, this is way too much bread, easily over 20K.
Wow.
Easily. And then I was like, yo, y'all throw me what you can.
Oh my God, no. I hate
$100 here.
I hate this story.
$55 here.
I hate this story.
Dogs. One guy was like, you got this, right? Nigga, what?
Oh my God.
Jay-Z didn't rap one lyric about this.
Right? Throw me what you can.
Throw me what you can. And that was my fault for doing.
Oh, you're buried.
Oh, yeah. Throw me what you can. I was like, oh, that was my first introduction to like, these things are different, bro. This is why people don't do this. Or you do it. Just differently.
Wow. And can you think of a moment in your life that now, in hindsight, you realize changed your life?
Ooh. Oh, man. Huh. Damn, that's a good
question.
Steve. I mean, damn, that's a lot, I guess, but...
I could throw a couple of other ones at you if you want.
I guess I didn't... When my friend Worm died after one of my homies... houses got shot up that I used to live at. And he wasn't a part of anything. He was just a kid who was hanging around us.
Oh.
And playing video games, and he got shot. And me and my friend was in the thick of shit, on bullshit, in the streets or whatever. And when that happened, we went to his funeral with his family, and we cried, and we were like, yo, we're going to stop doing the bullshit.
Wow.
So that kind of like put me on a track that got me here, really.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, that would be maybe, that's what comes to mind.
How old was he?
And that's not funny.
No, I know. I mean, it's awful. How old was he or how old were you?
He was 16.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe 15. 15 or 16.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But it was like, you know, it was terrible, but sometimes it takes that. And with moments like that, you go, one or two ways. You either go angry and go deeper and harder, or you try to like, you know.
Yeah. What's something you've learned about yourself as an adult that you didn't know about yourself when you were a kid?
That a lot of this shit that I was thinking that was happening was actually in here. Like if I had understood my anxiety and ADHD and my depression more as a kid, I probably would have had an easier time dealing with some things.
Yeah.
And I wish I just hadn't known. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now that I do know, I know how to break down a situation way better.
Yeah.
I was just angry as a kid all the time because I just had a lot of shit I didn't understand. You know what I mean? Is this answer supposed to be funny? I feel like I'm getting serious.
No, it's good. It's good. That's what the show always is. It's like the slow round stuff is like more like introspective.
I like that shit. Look at you, Mike. Deep as a motherfucker, fam.
This is a section we do called From the Notebook. It's just like things I wrote down that aren't done. I reached a point where I dread doing anything at all. Like if I'm going to the Comedy Cellar, all day I'm thinking, I got to take the F train from Bergen Street to West 4th.
Yeah.
And then I get on the subway and I'm like, I like the subway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then like even when it's pretty fast. You know what I mean? Like even when it's slow, I'm like, it's slow. I knew it would be slow. I like being right.
Yeah.
And then I'm on the subway and I'm like, oh, I gotta walk from West 4th Street to McDougal. And then I'm walking there and I'm like, I like walking. Get some steps in. Like so much of my life is balancing dread then excitement.
Oh, 100%.
Constantly.
That's so good. I do that shit anytime I have to like go see people.
You
know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh no. Oh man.
Yeah.
This is gonna be so much.
I gotta record a podcast, Mike.
And then I get there and every time I'm like, oh, I enjoyed this. I have fun here. And, you know, it's just like me constantly battling my mind. That's such a good bit, bro.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm kicking that one around. And then I wrote this down, which is parenting, I feel like, is like hiking. No one's ever like, hey, great job hiking. They're just like, keep hiking. And at some point, you see grandparents on the hike, and you walk with them for a little while, and then they can't keep up, and you're like, we're going to have to leave the grandparents behind.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do. Long hike.
Yeah. I love that.
So that was like a loose thing. And then the other day, I wrote this down, which is the other day I saw in Brooklyn a middle school kid almost ran over a homeless man with a cello. And I thought, never has a metaphor for Brooklyn gentrification been more on the nose.
Oh, that's great. A cello. I'd be pissed if I got hit with a cello. I would, because you don't even know who to punch. Play me something, you know?
Yeah, this is a little kid with a big-ass cello.
Oh,
like,
God.
How much does that cello cost?
Yeah, that's
cello's got to cost
thousands of dollars.
Right?
Easily thousands
of
dollars.
Come on.
To take that cello back.
Yeah.
Buy a video game. Let me see. I got some really dumb shit in here.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're about.
Super sure. So I was in TJ Maxx, and we were waiting in line, and this dude got on the intercom. Was like, give it up for Jason Phillips. He has saved 10% with a Target coupon. Woo! And then another person got it, and then I was like, yo, if they don't give me an announcement, do I just make them?
Yeah.
Like, you get up and you're like, you're not doing something announcement worthy, but all you did was come here to get announced. And you're like, what do I got to buy, my nigga? Announce me.
Yes,
like, we only announce with coupons. Nigga, fuck your coupons, bro. I bought $1,000 worth of shit. Announce me, my nigga.
I love that.
It's so,
I just love also, like, the observation of the announcement thing. It's like, it's absurd. It's like, We don't. We're good. We don't need any announcements.
Yeah, and the announcements is mad weird too. It's like, oh, give it up for Jason Phillips. He saved money because he didn't have enough real money.
Right.
Like, what the fuck, bro? Don't put my shit out there, dog.
Right.
You know what I mean? Give it up for Chris Redd, who made us have to tell his name. It's such a weird thing. Oh, they have a playlist for everything. There's a playlist on Spotify right now called Songs You Can Do CPR To.
Oh, my God.
I once almost drowned in a wave pool when I was 8. And if I wasn't for CPR, I wouldn't be here. But I will say, when I come to, I wasn't like, thank God I'm alive and y'all picked the right song.
That is so funny. I feel like if you're going to dig into that, it's a great premise. It's like, what are the songs?
Dude, it was like... Hero to save us.
Oh my gosh.
Nickelback. Could you imagine?
There you go.
Could you imagine being brought back to life?
Yeah.
Never made it as a wise man. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, there might be a joke in like, if I were brought back to life, you know, from an accident, blah, 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 I just don't know if I'd want to hear Nickelback.
Yeah.
Like, I might be like, you know, that might hurt the cause.
But then again, if it was like back to life, that'd be lit.
Nice.
That'd be lit.
That's
then a motherfucker,
nice.
RuPaul comes
there you
out.
Go. There
motherfuckers,
you go.
Jay-Z's dead with his fridge. It should be crazy.
Well, Chris, thanks for doing this. This is long overdue.
I man, I've been waiting to come talk
yeah,
to you, brother.
It's so fun.
I love everything you're doing, man, comedy-wise. You still acting, bro?
Still acting.
Man, I want you some shit.
I'm, you're one of the folks at the Comedy Cellar I'm always so psyched to see because you just always crush, and I'm so glad that your special is just so joke-dense and funny and original.
It means a lot,
and
bro.
You just knocked it out of the park. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you, man. I don't think anything should stay in the park. All of it should get knocked out that bitch. You know what I'm saying?
I'm trying to get the word out on that, but it's just sometimes my voice is so quiet.
You gotta get louder, baby.
All right,
man, Mike, appreciate you, bro.
All right, me too.
Working it out, cause it's not done. We're working it out, cause there's no.
That's going to do it for another episode of Working It Out. I loved talking to Chris Redd. And his Working Out for a Cause is NAACP Legal Defense Fund. We will link to them in the show notes and contribute to them as well. We encourage you to do the same. You can watch his HBO Max special on HBO Max. Chris Redd, Why Am I Like This? It's so funny. You can see The Old Man in the Pool in January. Must close January 15th. I think there's only a few seats left. Go on mikeonbroadway.com or get great deals on Today Tix. The producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Peter Salamone and Joseph Verbigli, associate producer Mabel Lewis, consulting producer Seth Barish, assistant producer Gary Simons and Lucy Jones. Sound mix by Shub Saran. Supervising engineer Kate Belinsky. Special thanks to Marissa Hurwitz and Josh Upfall. And my consiglieres, Mike Berkowitz. Special thanks to Jack Antonoff and Bleachers for their music. The music in the show right now, if you like the music in the show, is a project that Jack did called Red Hearse, which is fantastic, with Sam Du and Soundwave. Love that album as well. Special thanks to J-Hope Stein. Her book, Little Astronaut, is in your local bookstore. Special thanks, as always, to my daughter, Una, who built the original Radio 4 made of pillows. Thanks most of all to you who are listening. Thank you for all the feedback and nice comments on the Apple Podcast site. If you're enjoying it, give us a star rating and a comment. Say which episode that you enjoy most would help us a lot. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. Even if you're looking for a New Year's resolution, you could say, you know, this is the year I'm going to tell my enemies. I'm going to approach my enemies and tell them about my favorite podcast for creatives. Work out new ideas. I'll see you soon, everybody. Thanks for listening.